We'll look at the tape.
Hogan Johns.
I think we got to come out hard and stay hard.
Part of Chicago's best Bears coverage.
I don't know.
Now, here they are.
They're day-to-day in my mind.
WGN Radio's very own Adam Hogue.
I'm violent.
And the Chicago Sun-Times' Adam Johns.
What an a-hole.
Hug it, chug it, football!
What's up? Welcome in. Episode 138 of Hogue and Johns. An interesting week, a busy week, kind of a crazy week for everyone involved. And we moved the entire earth this morning to make sure we got this podcast to you.
That is true. That is true. I am home with my sixth son, my kindergartner. He's got that stomach bug going around, Mr. Hogue, and I've cleaned up more puke over the past 3 hours, or last night, over 3 hours, than any man should ever have to do.
That sounds absolutely miserable, but you're still here.
I've washed my hands, no lie, about 58 times.
Yeah, I believe you. My wife had the stomach bug earlier this week, and I was like, you know, like Danny Tanner in Full House, like how he's constantly just cleaning everything. I morphed into him for like 48 hours, like wiping down every little thing so that I didn't get sick and so James didn't get sick, because, oh, it's just bad. So I feel for you.
That's how bad that bug is. It's grown men are comparing themselves to Danny Tanner to avoid this sickness.
Yeah.
That's how bad this is. But yes, I've washed my hands. Literally, I'm just scalding hot water. It's a mess. The mess still continues here this morning at the Johns household. Quite the major cleanup.
So that's Adam Johns. He's on the phone. We realize this is not ideal, and the sound quality is not the greatest, but it's the best we can do. And kudos to our producer Joe Romano. We really spent like the last hour and a half trying to figure out the best situation to get this thing to you, and we did want to pull this off today as we record on Thursday, because the game's Saturday, so pushing this off to tomorrow really probably would not have worked, or would have been great, because it would have only left 24 hours before kickoff. I'm wondering how many fans even know the game is Saturday. Actually, let me rephrase that. I wonder how many fans don't realize that the game is Saturday and might be just looking for this on Sunday and may have missed it, because it's weird to have a Saturday game.
Yeah, well, it's that time of year. There's no college football game, and the NFL is going after those time slots and ratings as they do. It's throwing my schedule completely off. I don't know about you, but today is what Thursday. Vic Fangio should be talking, but he talked yesterday. I'm all up for grabs right now.
Follow us on Twitter at Adam Hogue, H-O-G-E, at Adam Johns, J-A-H-N-S. Our producer, Joe Romano, is at Joey Joe Rowe. You'll hear from him throughout the podcast. WGNRadio.com/Bears is where you can read me. ChicagoSunTimes.com is where you can read Johnsy. Usually, you would have a 10 Bears Things column from me. I am not doing that this week because I am working on a much larger scope, in-depth look at pretty much everything Ryan Pace has done in 3 years. It is not quite finished. It'll be out sometime today on Thursday. So look for that instead of
how many things is that? Like 38 things?
Yeah, it's at least 38. You know, that's why I had to just get tossed out the things this week. It's just you'll see. It's like a bullet point draft, free agency, coaching hire, the whole in-depth thing. You know, I did a similar thing. The reason I did this, Johns, is because I wrote a similar thing the weekend, week 17, 2014. We were in Minnesota. The Bears, like this year, finished the season in Minnesota. That was at TCF Bank Stadium because the new stadium wasn't done yet. And I wrote, the case for and against keeping Phil Emery. At that point, we pretty much knew Mark Trestman was gone. But people forget, going into that last week, it was not a given that Phil Emery was going to be gone. In hindsight, it seemed like a pretty easy decision. But going into that, we weren't really sure. So I wrote, kind of the for and against thing. And the list of reasons to get rid of him was much, much longer. And that's ultimately the route the Bears went.
I actually remember communicating with Emery, like, post-game Minnesota. Man, talking about, what was his word? Was it symmetry? The continuity. What was the word that you'd like to use in terms of his organization. I forget. Trestman used it a lot too, but
continuity.
What was the word? It was some fancy word, fancy schmancy word that shouldn't be used, you know, that often amongst football players. But hey, you know, there was an argument for keeping Phil. I don't think, you know, you see Kyle Long, Alshon Jeffrey, even Shane McClellan, Super Bowl champion Shane McClellan, you know, playing in the right position became an okay player. But I think that organization had enough, or the McCaskies had enough at that point.
Yeah, and I think what you'll find as I go even more in depth with Ryan Pace here, it's a different situation, and there's way more reasons to keep him than get rid of him. So look for that piece on WGNradio.com/Bears. All of John's stuff is up at ChicagoSunTimes.com, and you can find the podcast everywhere, iTunes, TuneIn, WGN Radio app, pretty much anywhere where you listen to podcasts. Just search Hogan Johns, and if you can, please rate and review it. Our voicemail line, 312-222-5050. Those continue to pour in. I'm interested to hear what they sounded like Sunday during not only a Bears win, but a Bears blowout victory. I don't even know that our callers know how to react to that. So Joe put them all together, and let's hear what they had to say this week.
Hello?
Do you know who this is?
Oh, you didn't know? Your ass better call somebody!
The Hogan Johns voicemail. The Hogan Johns voicemail line.
Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep.
Got any questions or comments about the Bears? Give the guys a call before, after, or even during the game. 312-222-5050.
Go Bears!
Hoagie, John B. Babb, Joe, Bob Dabrowski here, sitting in Cincinnati, eating a bucket of what looks like a spaghetti throw-up. They call it chili. I don't know. This Bears season has gone down the drain. Really has. You know, it looks like this chili stuff that I'm eating here, you know, the whole season in general. It's gross. And God help the Bears. God help Trubisky. God help Shaheen. Let's hope the kid gets on the field this week, for the love of God. You know, I've kind of missed on my predictions lately, but I'm predicting a Bears win here, okay?
Mike calling in from Denver, Colorado. Another winnable game. Will we become the kings of the AFC North? Will Trubisky be allowed to throw? Maybe, but I'm prepared for the letdown. Go Bears!
Alex from Florida. You know, there's a long offseason ahead, and all I want for Christmas is at least one Bears win. Oh, and for John Fox to get fired, please. You know what? Bear down.
Ross from Batavia. You know, we just watched this challenge on the illegal forward pass in the first quarter. I mean, if they can't get rid of Fox this coming week, why don't they just get rid of the guys that are giving him the advice on what to challenge? Because these challenges are garbage.
Joe from the Bronx. Out of curiosity, what would Tariq Cohen's season look like if he didn't have all these plays taken away? I've never seen a player with more touchdowns and big plays taken away by penalties.
Pete from Barrington here, really excited that John Fox wasted a timeout with that idiotic challenge so the Bears could run out of time here at the end of the half and not have that extra timeout. What a moron.
Lewis from Deltona, Florida. After watching this Trubisky Shaheen touchdown, I'm super pumped. This is Logan's play calling. There is no way you have Howard motion outside on a goal line play on a third down. This has Logan's written all over it. I love it. True goat ski all the way. Let's go Bears.
Ben from Colorado here. It's good to see these rookies play. Trubisky's actually looked really good. Shaheen's looking good. Cohen's breaking a few big runs. I got three words. Expand his package.
Andrew from Pittsburgh, thinking about calling in to the Cincinnati Police Department reporting assault on John Fox, Dal Loggins and company, because my God, this is just a beatdown. And it's crazy what happens when, you know, you play Tariq and Adam and let the training wheels off for Nick.
Sean from Scottsdale, take a bow, Ryan Pace. Trubisky, Shaheen, Cohen, Eddie Jackson, all balling out. Future looking bright. Let's see more of this.
Devin from Pekin, Illinois. Mr. Trubisky, 271 yards and a touchdown. Adam Shaheen, 4 receptions and a touchdown. Tariq Cohen, 12 carries for 80 yards. Eddie Jackson, interception, forced fumble, and a recovery. You can easily say without those draft picks, we are not winning this game. Let's go Bears.
Nate in Phoenix, Arizona. Good Bears win. Nice to see it. What the offense can look like once it's opened up. And can we petition Goodell to allow us to move to the AFC North?
Dean from Dallas at Just a Bear Fan on Twitter. Eddie Jackson is looking like he's going to be our safety for years to come. Two more turnovers today. Kyle Fuller, though, should have at least six interceptions on the season. Dear God, can he catch the ball? Mitch Trubisky is showing everybody why we weren't idiots for trading up to get him. And Jordan Howard is Jordan Howard, man. I think Ryan Pace's picks are actually shaping up and shipping stuff out. Go Bears.
Z from Noblesville, Indiana, and memory of a fallen Hoosier. Well, golly, look what happens when you play the kids and play the important people on the team. Bears win, Bears win. Hopefully it continues for the rest of the year. Bear down.
Mike Five from Valparaiso, Indiana. Dear George McCaskey, we had a nice win this week led by our rookie quarterback, Mitch Trubisky. But please let's not fool ourselves that stomping on the beat up and beat down 5-8 Bengals somehow means that John Fox could lead this team to the promised land. His win-loss record rivals Abe Gibbons, and he's definitely not the guy to mold Trubisky into a championship quarterback. He still needs to go. Sincerely, Bears fans everywhere.
AJ from Vegas. Who said we didn't have any wide receivers? We got Kendall Wright and Adam Shaheen, baby. Yeah.
Daniel from Big Red Country out in Omaha, and I got just a quick little diddle for you guys. Bear down, Chicago Bears! Jordan Howard, first 2 years, made it three. Bear down, Chicago Bears. All my hopes and faith is with Trubisky. Bear down, baby. Woo!
Holy Moses. Man, those songs.
That's a couple weeks in a row now. The musical talents of our listeners are coming through in the voicemail line.
Yeah.
The Christmas jingle thing, I think.
You know, we have a development in the Bob Dabrowski saga.
Yeah.
You know, every week our voicemails start with a call from Bob. I think he's on Twitter.
As Bob Dabrowski? Or the guy that was kind of questioning what Bob Dabrowski is going to say this week?
I don't know. There was because someone tweeted at us yesterday, at Bob Bear Thoughts, and his name says Bob Dabrowski. And he's followed by Rick Morrissey.
Really? Maybe it's Rick Morrissey calling in and letting his, you know, his roots show through, the Chicago roots.
Now, that would be awesome if that's who it was.
Yeah, this is the Viper's secret fandom of Mitch Trubisky.
What did he call the Skyline Chili? A bowl of throw-up or something?
I just pictured what I had to go through last night. So, yeah. Thanks a lot, Bob Dabrowski.
You were cleaning up a whole bunch of Skyline Chili. All right, well, thank you. Thanks for the voicemails again this week. We appreciate those. Again, the number is 312-222-5050. You are more than welcome to call in Saturday as the Bears take on the Lions in Detroit. All right. A lot of sound I want to get to from Hallis Hall. A lot of interesting things. Some has to do with this weekend's game against Detroit. A note on Vic Fangio's future. Devin Hester officially retiring. I got to say, I thought he had already retired. Was I the only one that was like, wait a minute, he didn't retire yet? I mean, it was great to have this discussion all week of whether or not he's a Hall of Famer. But I was like, I had to do a double take there. I thought he already retired.
But here's the thing, like, Lance Drake didn't come out with a statement. Charles Tillman didn't come out with a statement. You know, Brian Urlacher did. But a lot of these former Bears greats, they just kind of do their own thing and go into their own broadcasting careers and do whatever they want to do after they're done playing football. But, you know, Hester felt the need, compelled to release a statement, which is fine. You want to do what you want to do. So it kind of set off a whole debate of his Hall of Fame candidacy, just like I think if Tillman would have made a big heartfelt statement, then I think we would have debated it then too. But yes, you know, he's been out of the game for a long time. It's week 14, right? like he's not getting signed. Yeah. He's not coming back. I had assumed that he was long gone in his playing career, but obviously he still had some fish out there biting to see if he wanted to come back. But look, bottom line is I think he's a Hall of Famer. I think the specialists deserve more credit than they get. Kickers win games. Devin Hester won a lot of games for the Bears, and he's the best returner ever. The best players belong in the Hall of Fame.
Well, it was a smart PR move by him because he went on this little media tour. He launched the discussion on whether or not he's a Hall of Famer, and that's to get in, that's what you need. You need it being debated. You need it to be a conversation point, and at least for this week, it has been. I agree with you.
It won't be debated for 5 years, though.
Yeah, I know, but it like you said, we kind of forgotten. Whether or not he had really retired or not. So to come out and at least start this discussion, I think is a good thing. And now, right. You got to somehow keep it going for 5 years. At least for this week, it was smart. It was a smart PR move. I think he's a Hall of Famer, and I don't think it's. There's some interesting counterpoints because, for one, he has more return touchdowns than anybody in the league. 20 non-offensive touchdowns, and which is one more than Deion Sanders. The counterpoints to that are, in terms of return yardage, he's nowhere near the top, actually, which is kind of surprising. But part of that is because of how many times guys kicked away from him, which
absolutely.
To me only increases the amount of credit you have to give him for still getting 20 return touchdowns, right? Because his opportunities were so limited. And I also get to back to, imagine how many would have had teams not kicked away from him as much as they did. And then also think about the impact that had, not only on special teams, but on the offense and defense. Devin Hester affected all three phases of the football team because of field position. All those years the Bears did not have a great offense, they were getting good field position, and they were backing teams up, which was only helping their great defense. And throughout the course of, if you watch those Bears games, back when Devin Hester was Devin Hester, he was part of the conversation the entire game because teams were so scared of him. To me, players who are that impactful for a decade, which is what he was, he played over 10 years in the NFL. To me, those players are Hall of Famers.
Adam, what I hope that the writers, the voters do is do your research. Talk to these coaches that have to scheme against Devin Hester. They have to take so much more into account than your normal, everyday return man. This is not Mark Mariani. This is not taking away from even a rookie in Tariq Cohen. Devin Hester was such a unique threat every time he stepped on the field. And yes, they may have been five or six times a game. I get that. He wasn't a good receiver. I get that. Never worked out with Jay Cutler. I get that. But he was so good at what he did in returning the football. You have to ask around and ask these coaches how difficult of a challenge he was. And then I think you'll come to the conclusion that, you know what? This guy is worth my vote for the Hall of Fame.
That, my friend, is a professional radio/podcast segue because Bears special teams coordinator Jeff Rogers did not coach Devin Hester, but coached against him many times. And whether or not you like Rogers as the Bears special teams coordinator, I actually find a lot of the things he says during the week very interesting. He seems, he's got a lot of experience with special teams and really can explain things in a way that you don't always think about. Because let's face it, special teams just doesn't get the attention that offense and defense do. So he was asked about Devin Hester at Hal's Hall yesterday and went on for like 3 minutes with some fascinating stuff, I thought, on why Devin Hester was so good and so hard to prepare for. So here's the exchange between reporters at Hallis Hall and Bears special teams coordinator Jeff Rogers.
So, special teams coordinator, how do you appreciate how Devin Hester kind of changed kickoffs in the NFL?
I'd say changed the game, both kickoffs and punts. He's the best that's ever done it. Elite skill set. I never had a chance to coach him. I was across the sideline several times, and you're holding your breath. I mean, there's been nobody like him in my generation. He was really the first guy that you really game plan for, and you saw different people take different approaches. You know, you see people try and punt the ball out of bounds. Well, defenses can combat that, you know, with some of the rush games, so you may have to change that. You saw people get into the try and kick fair catch balls and short, because the reality is if you played Chicago when he was rolling and you came out of the game with a 35-36 net, which isn't great, but against him, you're usually taking that every time. So he's as good as it gets.
What was the strategy you took against him?
Different strategies. There was a game we played in Carolina where we were going to try and change it up, and we tried to punt the ball out of bounds, and our punter put the ball about 4 inches from the sideline. He reached in and got it and shot, you know, straight up the sideline. In Denver, we tried to hang it up there, did a good job on the first couple. Actually, the best ball that our punter hit that day, that was the 2011 game, the best ball our punter hit that day with hang time and distance, he kind of circled around, went backwards, sideline, and all of a sudden he turned the corner and, you're holding your breath. We were able to get him on the ground, but he's a game changer.
Tariq said last week that he watched some of his film and, you know, Devin on Madden and whatever. But because Hester was so unique, what can a young guy like Tariq pick up from just watching him?
Yeah, I think that his return style was unique. Devin Hester's was. And his ability to set up blocks in the open field while still being able to move and change the angles of people. What I noticed watching him return, it always seemed like he was never looking at the guy that was in front of him. He was one block ahead. He knew how he was going to make this guy miss. He was trying to make the next guy miss and set up his blocks. He had kind of a hesitation speed deal where it always seemed like he was moving about 80%, but when he put it into that final gear, he had a real ability to squeeze through some spaces that didn't look like he could. And, you know, as a young returner, some of those evasive maneuvers, I think, are things that can be learned, even if you don't have an identical skill set. But some of those traits, certainly with speed and quickness, Tariq's in the conversation, the same genre type. He's not a power returner, more of an evasive, elusive type guy.
I love what Jeff Rogers said there in that last answer with two things. The way he set up his blocks, he's so right. It was like Hester could see 15 yards downfield, not just the block that was in front of him, but the next one. The way he'd set those blocks up, those instincts, I just have not seen that from another returner before. And the speed, the way he changed his speeds. If you go back, I was watching some highlights yesterday. It looks like he's kind of jogging at times. And then all of a sudden, he hits that next gear and takes off. And there's so few players that have that raw ability. And look, I'm not old enough to really remember, you know, the prime time of Walter Payton's career. I know there have been other plenty exciting Bears players. But to me, my generation, Devin Hester's the most electric Bears player that I've ever seen. And every time he touched the ball it was the most exciting parts of the game, even if it was only a handful of times a game, and they'd kick away from him plenty. That kind of impact on the NFL, he should be in the Hall of Fame.
You know, people talk about like lightning bulb memories, something that's so either traumatic or exciting or exhilarating that you kind of remember when and where you were. You know, there's always the bad events, but there's a lot of good events, too. And for some reason, in my recollection of memories, I can remember exactly where I was, what I was doing, when Devin Hester returned that opening kickoff in the Super Bowl against the Colts. And I remember the jubilation, celebration. I was in the basement at Lobby's Bar at a private party next to my wife and some of her friends. And my future brother-in-law and some of his buddies were there, and I just remember all the dancing, the jubilation, the celebration of that moment. It's just one of those things that's you just remember so vividly. That seems to be one of the football plays, at least in my football watching experiences, that is there. You know, the story of his arrival, I always found, you know, to be so unique. You know, I did share some of it in a story before this season. You know, Mark Sadowski, the scout that is credited with identifying everything that is Devin Hester. You know, he's still on the Bears staff. He's been promoted a couple times, and now he's the Bears director of college scouting. But back then, he was the Bears Southeast scout out, and he loved Devin Hester. And he had to go to bat for him, you know, amongst the Bears coaches, amongst the other scouts, when they were doing their draft meetings and where they're going to, you know, set these guys up on their board. You know, Devin Hester was a second-round pick. We didn't have a position. So he really sold this guy hard. And you know, Sadowski deserves a lot of credit for Devin Hester's arrival here, because there was people at Hal Saul who didn't really believe in what this guy could do because he didn't have a position.
Yeah, and I've talked to Greg Gabriel, the Bears director of college scouting at that time, a few times about this, and he'll tell you the story of how, I mean, they, at the end, they were pretty dead set on getting Devin after all that convincing that it took, but they thought that they kind of had to reach in the second round because the fact he didn't have a position, they felt like most teams didn't think he was a third rounder. And when Greg called Devin to tell him the Bears were drafting him, Devin almost didn't believe him because he said, hey, the Tennessee Titans called me and said they were drafting me, and then they never called me back. So the Bears almost lost Devin Hester,
yeah.
Which shows you that, you know, they weren't the only ones that were on him, but it turned out to be, you know, one of the better draft picks of the Jerry Angelo era for sure. So, look, you're right. 5 years from now, he's got to wait a long time before he actually gets in the Hall of Fame, but it's a fascinating discussion and just a, you know, a unique player in NFL history. And so that's why it'll be kind of a tough discussion, too, going forward. Number of other things I want to get to. But this was an interesting exchange the other day at Hallis Hall between Mitch Trubisky and your colleague Patrick Finley, Johns.
Oh, he's just my colleague now. He's not yours anymore?
No, not anymore. Not anymore.
Not after this? Okay.
Well, I don't know. We have to listen to this. It sounds to me like Mitch Trubisky threatened a reporter. So here's the exchange between Pat Finley and Mitch Trubisky the other day.
You haven't thrown an interception on third down.
Why would you jinx me? Come on, dude. Come on, dude. That's not cool.
What's the balance?
Don't talk about it.
What's the balance?
Put him in a timeout.
You're facing a team.
The best way to not do it is not talk about it. Just working hard on third down, trusting my guys, and again being aggressive within the timing of the play, and trusting my reads, and just continue to use my accuracy and use good footwork is just what's going to allow us to stay good on third down, and taking care of the football is always number one priority. So we're just going to continue to focus on that. You better hope. Oh my gosh.
You better hope. I mean, that sounds like a threat to me.
I love that he said to put him in a timeout. As a father of three, you know, Pat Finley, the starting quarterback of the Chicago Bears, the rookie starting quarterback of the Chicago Bears, just told Pat Finley to go take a timeout, just like he's like a three-year-old infant who just, you know, spilled milk and danced in it or something, you know. Take a timeout, Pat.
Is that the meat smoker guy?
Yeah.
I like how you put that, the meat smoker guy.
Yeah, Pat is the meat smoker guy.
And
put him in a timeout.
In case you couldn't hear the question at the beginning, it was just Pat bringing up the fact that Trubisky has not thrown an interception on third down yet. And
yeah.
And Mitch immediately interrupted him.
Why would you jinx me? Come on, dude. Come on, dude. That's not cool.
What's the balance?
Don't talk about it.
What's the balance?
Put him in a timeout.
Put him in a timeout.
Put him in a timeout. I love it. I love it. I love it. Where do you think the timeout room is at Hallis Hall? It's got to be that old dingy closet.
Yeah, the closet that we do the that we've recorded the podcast many times. It's got to be the timeout room.
Yes, which is, you know, that used to be the old Nest NFL Network recording room. Now it's just full of junk. So, yeah, that's the timeout room. Definitely the timeout room. Or the sushi room, wherever they keep that. That's also a good one.
Yeah.
Josh, who's the best meat smoker of your offensive line?
What do you mean by meat smoker?
So that's Pat laughing. Inappropriate.
The meat smoker guy.
The meat smoker guy. That's how he's known for now on.
Right, the meat.
The guy who jinxed Mitch Trubisky. Boy, I'm kind of rooting for a third down interception now.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, I kind of am. Like, just maybe like a tip pass, not Trubisky's fault, just something where everybody in the press box, you'll look at Finley and be like, dude, you did it. Trubisky's going to come and get you. You're going to have to take a timeout at Hallis Hall on Monday. It's just going to have to be the reality of the situation, Pat. You did it. You jinxed it.
You better hope you. Oh, my gosh.
I mean, Brad Biggs already blames everything on Finley.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So now he can actually blame, like, a result on him.
Yeah. According to Biggsy, that every single illness that has passed through the halls of Hallis Hall's media room is the result of Patrick Finley. And I am becoming, I'm falling in line with that with that thought in terms of.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Pat was sick for like a month, Adam. A month. And those germs seem to have really entrenched themselves in our area of Hallis Hall.
Well, I'm glad I sit over by Zach Zaman then, because Zach is like a germaphobe. So I know that that everything's always clean around there.
Cleans your desk. That's good.
I think he wipes down my desk every single day before I get there. I have a theory. I can't prove it, but yeah. By the way,
golly,
from one Sun-Times colleague to the next, I found this exchange between Mark Potash and Vic Fangio yesterday at Hallis Hall kind of interesting. I don't know what kind of conclusion to make from it, but it does seem topical, as Fangio was asked by Potsy about his future.
We're into the home stretch, and you know, who knows what the future holds for anybody, but how desirous are you to kind of see this thing through on defense? I mean, you've built from below ground to above ground. How eager are you to kind of see this thing through, you know, long term and build a max out with defense? It seems like it has some potential.
You know, definitely interested in that.
Anything in particular that makes you feel that way?
Well, I like the guys we're working with, players. They're really a good bunch of guys. My favorite part of the day is getting up in front of them and, you know, watching tape with them or putting in the defenses for the week. And I enjoy being around these guys. They're really a good bunch of guys.
It's the growth part of it that you've seen so far. I know injuries have been a factor, but I mean, as far as growth...
I think we've had growth. Obviously, not... In the leaps and bounds that you need, you know, as evidenced by our record, but there has been growth.
So I got that initial question at 19 seconds, and Fangio's answer at exactly 1 second.
Definitely.
So, what do you think? Do you think he's definitely interested or not? Because I believe what Potsy's trying to get at is seeing this thing into 2018, if that becomes an option for him. What do you think Fangio thinks?
I would have to set the odds of Fangio returning in 2018 at very, very, very low. I would think that everyone in the Bears organization would be interested in seeing if he'll stick around, even if there is a coaching change. But his contract is up. I imagine that's had to have been addressed before if you're doing your job, right? And yet his contract's still up. So, I think there's it's completely fair to wonder whether or not Vic Fangio wants to go somewhere else. Does he want to go back to San Francisco? That topic came up a couple weeks ago when the 49ers came to Chicago. Kyle Shanahan wanted to hire him last year. And could be looking to make a change at defensive coordinator again this offseason. So it just doesn't seem likely that he'll return in 2018. I don't think you rule it out. You never know who the Bears are going to hire. Maybe they hire someone who has history with Vic Fangio. But it just seems unlikely right now.
Yeah, especially if they're going to make changes from the top down. Guys want to bring their own guys. And the Fangio thing's always been interesting because he's the only one who didn't really accept the extension past this season. So you could tell that, you know, he's had coaching aspirations. There's no secret about that. But I don't know in this day and age that a defensive mind like him is going to get the job that he wants. It's a quarterback, you know, oriented league now. They want offensive minds. You look at Sean McVay, you look at the Doug Petersons of the world, you look at the Kyle Shanahans of the world. That is where it's trending. Now, I know there's defensive guys who they get jobs, but everybody wants the next offensive mind. And I'm sorry, that is not Vic Fangio. So, look, I think he's got a lot of good things to feel about. There's been so much change defensively, from just the personnel standpoint, right? I mean, Vic Fangio's first year here, Shane McClellan, who he liked, was calling his defensive signals. Now you got Danny Trevathan and Nick Wachowski out there. You got more draft picks. You got Akeem Hicks. So much personnel change. And I think Vic Fangio was actually excited by some of the pieces he has here with the Bears. I mean, and who's to say, if he does get another defensive coordinator job somewhere, that the players that he has on that team, whoever it may be, are going to be better than what the Bears have right now.
Yeah, true. That's just an interesting topic that came up yesterday at Hal's Hall. I thought it was worth bringing it to you. Should we start talking about this game Saturday? Bears, Lions, potentially a winning situation? Let's dive into it. But first, what does the Fox say?
I was actually at at the induction when he was inducted. What the Fox say?
John Fox talking about Ray Guy. What the Fox
say? Being at his induction.
He was at the induction where he was inducted.
I was actually at his, at the induction when he was inducted.
Yes, that would be an induction. You know, you get inducted at inductions, John. Yeah.
And Carlos Santos.
All right. Bears Lions in Detroit, a Saturday game, 3:30. This is 3:30 Saturday. Weird time. They're not playing at noon. It's late afternoon. It's on a Saturday, and it's on NFL Network. Mike Tirico and Kurt Warner have the call, so that should be interesting from a television viewing standpoint. Locally, if you don't have the NFL Network and you're in the Chicago area, the game is airing on NBC5, simulcasted on NBC5, so you can watch it there locally as well. The spread opened up at the Lions were a 6.5-point favorite. It's now down to 5.5, which doesn't surprise me. I mean, the Bears, with the effort they showed last week, they've done a pretty decent job of covering when they are, around a touchdown underdog. So I'm not surprised that that has slid down a little bit. But, Johns, I want to bring up an interesting angle that Fox kind of offered up on his own yesterday. This will be the third time the Bears are headed to Detroit under John Fox. And the last couple of years have had some questionable calls. And Fox brought that up on his own yesterday, responding to a different question. And I just thought this this exchange was interesting, so I'm going to play it for you.
The game against Detroit, I know it was in that last quarter a year ago, was a 17-20 game. We had the ball at the end, with a chance, had a couple penalties. Talked to the officiating department today about that. Actually, our last two trips to Detroit have been interesting that way. Really exactly last year and how we ended up defensively or not. I think we've ended up about 15th last year, which was okay for what we ended up the season with. I just think we're probably a little bit better right now and get a good test against a good Detroit team, still fighting for a playoff spot at their place.
Is there any common reason why your last two Detroit trips ahead will be some
difficult? No, I think I remember it like it was yesterday, but the reversal, I think the original call was a touchback, and they reversed it to a touchdown, and there was a particular roughing the passer call and a critical play that I thought had some bearing. And then last year we had two holding penalties in the last 59 seconds of the game. Actually, two catches in a row. I don't remember which one was which.
So when you talk to the officiating department, is it just, hey, keep an eye on this? Or
I really wouldn't want to go into the exact verbiage, but something along those lines.
So I looked it up. Jeff Triplett was the referee in Detroit last year. And Jeff Triplett is the referee in Detroit on Saturday. And I imagine that has something to do with why John Fox talked to the officiating department.
Yeah. Laying the groundwork for what I would think Fox thinks is a fairer game in the Motor City.
I think he has a point, too, by the way. Going back 2 years ago, and Triplett was not the ref in that game, but these were more replay reversal issues, other than the roughing the passer that he referred to, which I don't remember off the top of my head. But you may remember there were two catch-no-catch situations in this game. One being when Golden Tate, I think it was, who caught the ball in the end zone and then had it dislodged, and the Bears ended up intercepting the ball. And it was ruled an interception and a touchback on the field. And they reversed it to a touchdown,
saying that
Golden Tate had the ball long enough. And part of the reason why it was so controversial in this particular game is because the Bears had a similar play, I believe earlier or right after. I'm forgetting the exact time frame, but Fox kind of mentioned it there. And I want to say it was Eddie Royal who caught the ball and then had it dislodged, and they ruled that incomplete, saying he didn't have the ball long enough. And this gets back to the thing that always bothers me about this discussion, which is it seems to get ruled differently when you're in the middle of the field and when you're in the end zone. And by the way, Golden Tate had that ball for a lot less time than Zach Miller did in New Orleans earlier this year. So yeah. I think that's part of the building frustration with it. And that was just 2 years ago. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do. It's all coming back to me now. I kind of vividly remember the Golden Tate play from where we sit in the press box. It was the left end zone, if I remember correctly. And Andrew Oil rolled over the middle. But count me amongst the fans and the frustrated media members that who have no idea what a catch is. And the criticism that the officials should get, you know me, Adam. You're the officials guy. You harp on them more than I do. But just the Zach Miller call and the inconsistencies of their decisions, all the way up to the top. It's baffling. It deserves every bit of criticism it gets. It's why I think at the owners' meetings when we go down to Florida in March, it's going to be a hot topic. There seems to be no consistency. You know, they're just making these decisions that win. They're looking for things that aren't there and making decisions off that. All of it's baffling. So I'm going to give Fox credit for being proactive on this and trying to lay some groundwork for a fair game, at least in his opinion, to be called in Detroit.
This is kind of getting off topic of just Detroit, but I have had some conversations with some league sources, really going back to the Zach Miller situation in New Orleans, just kind of gradually over the last month or so. And I can report that there is frustration with the job that Alberto Riveron is doing as the league's replay official. And the inconsistencies there that have clearly impacted the Bears, but plenty of other teams too this season. And like you just said, I think that that's something that's going to be a topic in the offseason. And this is me interjecting my own opinion now, but I would not be surprised if someone else has that job next season.
Zach Miller call is brutal. Go ahead, sorry. The Zach Miller.
Yeah, and it's not just the fact that a mistake was made on that play. My understanding is, and I think Bears fans were put off by it. I think Zach Miller, although he hasn't talked about it, was probably put off by it. And the Bears organization really rubbed the wrong way with the video that he put out a few days later, supporting
like
his...
Earlier than he puts out other videos. And like,
right, it was earlier in the week. It was like he was making a point to show that he was right, and he provided absolutely no evidence in that video, pointing to literally nothing and saying it was the ball hitting the ground. That was, from my understanding, even more of a problem than the actual getting it wrong on the field. And from that standpoint, I completely agree. If he had come out and said, look, we screwed this one up. We wish Zach Miller the best. It's an unfortunate situation. You know, official screw up. The NBA puts out a report that says when their officials screw up. They take it to the other extreme. But instead of doing that, he doubled down on his awful call. And that's what is part of the problem. And it's not just about the Zach Miller play. This has been going on all season, and it's just not sitting right with a lot of people in the league.
No, it shouldn't. It's ruining the game. I don't mean to get off tangent here, you know, because we do have the Lions game to preview, but, you know, since Fox brought it up, you know, and we're going down this road, I think whether it's his calls, officials' calls, you know, the bewilderment, the confusion, the looking for proof when there is none, and trying to find the tiniest sliver to back up what you think it is. It's just baffling. It's really bad for the game. Absolutely bad for the game.
And getting back to last year's game, Fox referenced the two holding calls late in the game. I do remember both were pretty debatable. He didn't mention Jeff Triplett's name, but Triplett was the ref in Detroit. I didn't go back and watch those calls, but considering they were holding calls, usually it's the referee making those calls more times than not. So... it's just an interesting angle to keep in mind on Saturday as the Bears face the Lions again in Detroit. If there's any bad or questionable calls, we can go back to this conversation that John Fox had yesterday at Hallis Hall. Let's get to our big question, though, for this game. Mine is, can Mitch Trubisky and the Bears keep this offensive surge going? The Lions are not a great defensive team. I went back and watched their game from a few weeks ago when the Bears played the Lions at Soldier Field. The Bears moved the ball for much of that game. They had a lead, and if it wasn't for Kyle Long's... Kyle Long had the late hit on a play the Bears had gotten downfield, and that brought the ball back, and then on the very next snap, Mitch Trubisky fumbled the snap. The Lions returned it for a touchdown. Even after that, the Bears went right back down the field and scored again. It was really the defense that just let up too many bad plays at key moments. That was the game where Marcus Cooper randomly came in the second quarter for Kyle Fuller, who had kind of been struggling. He struggled against the Packers. He struggled early in that game against the Lions, and Cooper immediately gave up two big plays, including a touchdown. So it was a game in which the Bears actually moved the ball, and could do so again in Detroit.
My big question is, Mitch Trubisky going to throw an interception on third down? No, I'm kidding. It's the defensively. I agree with everything you said about Trubisky and feeling good going into this game, but the banged up Bears defense played pretty well against Andy Dalton and AJ Green. The Lions, now they don't have a running game, but Matthew Stafford, injuries and all, is a lot better of a quarterback than Andy Dalton will ever be. I like the combination of Marvin Jones and Golden Tate a lot more than I like throwing the ball up to Andy Green, AJ Green. So the Bears defense getting Adrian Amos back, maybe getting Eddie Goldman back, they should feel good about themselves. But they're in for a big test on the road. They're going to have some type of pass rush from Kramel McPhee, who is also returning. So my big question, my concern is can the defense repeat what they did in Cincinnati on the road in Detroit in a more hostile environment against a better team? Because I think Mitch Trubisky will be good. I think he will move the ball. I think he has a lot of confidence coming out of the Cincinnati game, out of the 49ers game, and also seeing himself on tape against the Lions in Week 11. He was very successful in that game, especially given what was that, his fourth or fifth start. He was good that game. The offense, to me, is not the problem. It's the defense and what they can do against Matthew Stafford, who has the playoff play for in this game.
Yeah, it's a completely different opponent. I mean, the Bengals, we talked about this on Sunday, were completely listless. I mean, especially on offense, and they had been a bad offense all year, really. That's been their problem. So you're talking about going from facing a Bengals team that really had no life to facing a Lions team that is playing for the playoffs. It's a much different situation, and it's a much better offense, too. So the Bears' defense is going to be tested. There were times in that first game against the Lions when they looked good. There were times when they gave up too many big plays, and the Lions are kind of one-dimensional, and yet it doesn't seem to hurt them too much because Matthew Stafford's having a great year and can beat you through the air. So I think we're on the same page from that standpoint, including, though, Mitch Trubisky being able to have some success in this game, which gets me to
bold predictions.
I think Mitch Trubisky is responsible for at least 3 touchdowns in this game.
Dude, that was... No lie. That is my same exact bold prediction. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah?
No baloney there. Yeah. I actually wanted to give him 4, but I thought 3 is more reasonable. I think one of them could be a rushing touchdown, and I still have, you know, the receivers may be open like 7-11, as Kendall Wright says, but they're still the Bears receivers. I don't care what he says. I think Trubisky's going to have a good day. I really do. I don't think he's going to be overwhelmed by playing indoors and a loud place like that. He already did that in New Orleans against a better team. So I think he's very productive. Yeah, I agree with you. That's my bold prediction, too. 3 touchdowns somehow. I think one's a rushing, though.
And what's interesting is that the Lions have kind of struggled against zone reads this year. The Bears got him for that a few times in that first game. Remember, there was a keeper that Trubisky had. There was another one near the red zone that he kind of fell down. The Soldier Field turf monster got him. So it was something the Bears tried to utilize in the first game and had some success doing so, and it's been a problem for the Lions. So I would look for more of that with both Tariq Cohen and Jordan Howard involved in this game. Maybe even some more Wildcat, which I can't believe the Bears had success with that against the Bengals. That just shows you how dead the Bengals were, because I haven't seen the Wildcat actually work like that since, like, when Arkansas was running it with Darren McFadden. It never works. The Wildcat never works.
Hey, do you know that John Fox literally created the Wildcat? Like, it's his baby, Adam. You remember that?
Yeah, I think he did claim to do so.
Yes, he did. He did. It's been a long year, but he did. It was part of the
season. I was a math major. I wasn't, actually, but...
Yeah. Predictions. I think the Bears are going to be competitive. I think that cover... but I'm going to make a similar prediction as I did last week, which obviously backfired, but it's a much different opponent. I don't think the Bears win. I can't quite go that far against a team that is playing at home in a very important game for them. It's going to be highly motivated. Now, we've seen the Lions drop plenty of these games in years past in big moments, so it would not be a shock to see the Lions fall flat here. But I think there's going to be a lot of points scored. I just don't know that I can pick the Bears. So in the end, I got the Lions 31 and the Bears 30.
Wow. High scoring affair. I got the Lions 31-24. So I guess they do cover, 5.5? You said, I see a high scoring game. I don't think the Bears make enough plays to keep up. I think maybe a couple defensive mistakes, a couple miscues. Matthew Stafford's able to take advantage of them. You're right. The Lions, they're not going to be listless. They have so much to play for. Now, I mean, the only thing that's changed about the Lions right now is why their head coach, Jim Caldwell, can't answer normal human being questions about his favorite movie or his favorite songs or his favorite post-game meals. I mean, first of all, what is up with that? What is his favorite movie if he's so uncomfortable talking about it? You know, I kept trying to think maybe it's like Striptease or Boogie Nights or something like that, which, you know, something kind of semi inappropriate, but
it's probably like Twilight or something.
the whole series.
Yeah, he just goes home every night and watches Twilight.
Yeah. The Notebook on replay, something like that.
Hey, The Notebook is a good movie. Come on.
Yeah. He shouldn't be ashamed of that. The Notebook's okay. I get that, but
sexy.
And may or may not. So I don't know what's going on with Jim Caldwell and why he wants to be so non-human in this case, but he should have a motivated football team. This will not be like Andy Dalton and Marvin Lewis and whatever that's going on, whatever's going on with Cincinnati. So should be a better game for them.
And let's not forget that Connor Barth had the field goal at the end of this game. I mean, there was the chance to tie and go to overtime, and instead we got...
Holy Moses!
And that was the end of Connor Barth.
Yes.
And then they signed...
And Carlos Santos.
Instead. And that didn't work out either.
That's Mike Nugent.
Now it's like
now,
Mike
never
Nugent,
know.
Who missed his first extra point attempt.
Holy Moses!
Yeah. At least that one hit the upright.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Close is good.
All right, should we get to our other games here? Week 15 in the NFL. We're just going to do NFL games again. There's a couple college bowl games, but they're really not that great. So we'll just try to go through these games across the NFC North, starting with the Packers.
But, you know, these guys are working very hard to conclude this final lap of the preseason tomorrow night against the Saints, and we will proudly stand as a 95th team in the history of the Green Bay Packers when we kick Chicago.
Well, they're not playing Chicago. Instead, the Carolina Panthers and the return of Aaron Rodgers.
Is this line still 6?
No, it has gone down to 3. I was shocked there was a line originally when we knew that that we were waiting on Aaron Rodgers' status. And what there was a line, it was 6, and it has since moved to 3. Not surprisingly, Rodgers is worth at least 3 points, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's setting up perfectly for the Packers, is it not? Rodgers comes back. They got to win out. They have a chance. They got some good teams to face. No problem for Rodgers. I'm picking the Packers. It's just what they do. They make storybook runs like this. They have Aaron Rodgers, the best quarterback in the game. This is what they do. Give me him, especially the points, but I think they went out right.
Yeah, I'm with you. Now, the Panthers did beat the Vikings last week, which was impressive. By the way, this game's noon Sunday on Fox. With the Bears playing Saturday, you'll get a chance to watch this one.
Case Keenum, Aaron Rodgers, Adam. Come on.
Yeah, I understand. And it does just kind of have that feeling, right? I felt this way for weeks that if the Packers – in fact, I was in Wisconsin at Thanksgiving telling family members – who had pretty much quit on the season, I go, do you realize you have the Browns and the Bucks the next couple weeks? Or the opposite order, the Bucks and then the Browns. I mean, you can win these next two games with Brett Hundley, and then you probably have Rodgers back. And they might win out again. They might have a chance here. So it just feels right. I'm gonna take the Packers. Joe, by the way, we didn't let you make your Bears pick, too. So you can make both.
Okay, I'll start with the Packers. Yeah, I agree with you. I think Rodgers coming back is a big deal, but I think they might be rushing it. They beat the Buccaneers and Browns, but it took overtime in both games. I think the injury might not be totally healed, and I think the Panthers win and cover the spread. For the Bears, I love the way they played against the Lions, and I just don't think the Lions are a very good team. I'm not surprised that the number dropped from 6.5 to 5.5, and I got the Bears to cover and maybe even win outright. I'll take the Bears 20-17.
20-17, the Bears victory. How about that?
Yeah, baby.
Wow. Could happen. Still be in it.
No.
I like the confidence, though. I mean, I got it a one-point game. You sure you don't want to lock that up since you're picking them outright?
No, I'm good on that.
No.
Okay. It was Mike Glennon's birthday the other day, by the way.
You think he had a party?
Did you see Larry Mayer's face when he wished Mike Glennon a happy birthday? And Mike Glennon responded to him in a joke. Larry turned around, the Bears senior website reporter, with the look of, let's call it, a five-year-old getting a glove thrown to him by his favorite player coming off the field. Larry looked so happy. It was quite funny.
I did see that. I did, because I was in the middle of a conversation with Larry, and he stop that conversation to go out of his way and tell a stupid joke to Mike Glennon, which he had clearly had lined up for about an hour and a half.
Maybe more. Thought about it in bed overnight. Absolutely.
And the joke was, is it your birthday today? Oh, how old are you? To which Mike Glennon said, 28. And Larry immediately said, oh, I have clothes older than that.
We need him on a podcast before the end of the year.
Yeah.
Rob Riggle himself. Have to make it happen. Sorry.
Rob Riggle himself. That's...
Golly.
Yeah. We love you, Larry. All right. So we're all going, two of us are going Packers, and Joe is going, Joe's just disagreeing with us. He's picking the Bears, and he's picking the Panthers.
Which went really well last week when Hogue went 5-2, Johns went 4-3, and I went 3-4.
Yes.
You know, I think Adams had a good season.
All right, moving on. Bengals. Those listless Bengals. They go on the road to Minnesota and play a much better team than the Minnesota Vikings. The Vikings are 10.5-point favorites. This is a noon game Sunday on CBS. And I don't know that this requires much analysis, but I am taking the Vikings.
Me too. Ditto? Should I say ditto? No, ditto's not. No, that doesn't work. Me too.
I mean, the Bengals seem dead. The Vikings are coming off a loss. They're coming back home. They know they got to win. In fact,
You better lock it up. No, you lock it up. Lock it up.
Yeah, I'll take the Vikings too. Bengals showed no life. Adam, you talked about it on the podcast, how empty that stadium was. Their fans don't care. Their players obviously don't care. And it's getting to the point where you got to wonder if the coach even cares.
Yeah, it was bad. It was. I mean, we always look at everything through a Bears lens, but in Cincinnati last week, the way they lost that game to the Bears, I mean, can you imagine if that had been flipped around? It would have been the equivalent of kind of if the Bears had gotten blown out by the 49ers. Not just lost the way, it was bad enough the way they lost, but like if they had been blown out and didn't even show up, imagine how bad that would have looked.
And Robbie Gould still kicked 5 field goals?
Yeah, Robbie Gould would have had like 15 field goals then.
Okay, 10.
He still had all their points, but instead of 15, had 30.
Yeah, it's more realistic than 15.
I think that math checks out. Maybe.
I was a math major. I wasn't, actually, but...
All right, let's move on.
This is Jay Cutler.
What's up, Jay?
Hey, Jay.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
How are you doing?
Pretty good.
Jay Cutler beat Tom Brady. Outplayed Tom Brady. So we have to go back to picking the Dolphins games. That you do that, and you earn the right to have your games picked on the Hogan Johns podcast once again. Right? That makes sense?
Yeah. Gosh, did you see how ecstatic he was during that win over Tom Brady? The fist pumps, the hugging of what's his name, Matt Moore on the sideline, the fist pumps to Adam Gase. That may go down as his best win ever.
Look at you analyzing Jay Cutler's sideline demeanor.
That's what we do. Body language and Jay Cutler are meant to be together. But yeah, it's... At least that's the vibe I got from watching him on TV and having covered him for about 6+ years. Is that win meant so much to him? I mean, this could be it. This could be his last year in the NFL. I think he knows that. I don't know if he wants to come back. But the way he played against Tom Brady, the greatest quarterback of all time, was impressive. He outplayed Tom Brady on one night in Miami.
It was a big win for him, no question about it. So we go back to picking his games. I don't know that the Dolphins are quite relevant again in the wild card race, but they're only a game back at 6-7. A lot of teams in front of them. The Bills, meanwhile, are tied for that last playoff spot at 7-6. So this is a big game. There's no line on it right now, though. And I can't, I'm not sure why, but there's no line on this game right now. I would imagine it's pretty even the way these teams have played. Noon Sunday on CBS, so we'll just pick it straight up. The Bills, of course, played that crazy snow game last week.
Yeah, what's the forecast up there now?
I don't know. Maybe there's snow in there again.
Yeah. But I don't care. Give me Jay. Give me Jay Cutler. Straight up. There's my answer. Red hot. Maybe classic Jay Cutler trap game, bad game, but give me him against the Bills.
Yeah, I'm going to go the other way and just say that it's the Jay Cutler. After a big game, then it's going to be a bad game, right? So I'm going to take the Bills.
Yeah, the Dolphins played really well for 2.5 quarters. I think they had a little bit of trouble salting the game away. Patriots could have and probably should have come back. All that being said, I don't really know which way to go here. I guess the Dolphins have a better quarterback, so I'll take the Dolphins.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Especially if Nathan Peterman's out there. All righty.
The Chicago Bears select Mitchell Trubisky.
Oh, wow! The Rams, fresh off their loss to the Eagles at home last week, they have another big game here, and they go to Seattle, who they are trying to hold off in the NFC West. So this is a huge game. Seattle, game back. They win this one, and they're right there. Both teams would be tied at 9-5 then in the NFC West. The Seahawks are a 2.5-point favorite now. This was 2. It's now at 2.5. 3:05 game Sunday on Fox.
I'm not even offering much analysis on this one. Both teams obviously have a lot to play for. I'm going with Seahawks. I don't quite trust Sean McVay in the Rams quite yet, and Jared Goff. I mean, does that make sense to you? Everybody's in love with what they're doing right now, but I feel like they've come back to earth. And a bit, still very formidable, still very talented. Jared Goff, still a very good quarterback. But give me the Seahawks in this one for sure.
I gave the Seahawks a lot of credit. I think I mentioned this last week. The way that they continue to fight, despite all the injuries that they've had on defense. I found the line last week, the way the Jaguars were favored over the Seahawks in Jacksonville, really questionable. And yet that was looking like a blowout until once again the Seahawks battled their way back. So I give them a lot of credit. I think the Rams are still the better team, though, and they're getting the points. I know it's on the road. It's a tough game, but coming off the tough loss to the Eagles, I think the Rams bounce back, and I'm going to pick L.A. here.
Well, you know, I'm going to lock it up only on this thought. Didn't the Red Hat Carson Wentz, after smacking around the Bears, go into Seattle and not play well whatsoever? I mean, he was exciting in certain moments, but the Seahawks came away with the victory. Give me Russell Wilson in this one against Jared Goff again.
You better lock it up. Lock it up.
Joe.
I love the way the Rams played against the Eagles, and to be honest, if you look back at the last few years, the way the Rams have played against the Seahawks, you know, going back all the way to their days in St. Louis, that's a team that, you know, has always played tight games, and now they finally have an offense to go with it. Todd Gurley is running around like a madman. I really, really like the Rams in this game, and actually we're going to have a dueling locks here, John Z. I am locking up the Rams.
You better lock it up.
Dueling locks, but opposite locks. I like it. Yeah, I like the Rams here too. I think they're gonna pull it off. All right, and then this is the second biggest game because the biggest game is between the two top teams in the AFC.
No, I'm not an offense coordinator. I'm not a defense coordinator. I'm not a special teams coordinator. But I coordinate all three.
This one, 3:25 Sunday on CBS. Both teams coming off losses. The New England Patriots head to Pittsburgh to face the Steelers. And the Steelers are a 3-point home dog. What do you think about the home dog, John Z?
The Steelers, and won. Sorry to interrupt, but the Steelers came back and won.
Oh, yeah. You know what? The reason why I thought they lost is because they didn't cover the spread.
Ah.
So.
No, you fell asleep, did you not?
And that too. Was that the which?
That was Sunday night.
Yeah, I didn't see the end of the game. Yeah, that's what happened. I got TV early Monday morning.
I,
I fell asleep too. I fell asleep too. It's okay. It's all fair. You can say what you want.
I knew they won, though.
I like the Steelers and the points. How could you not? I get that, you know, Tom Brady coming off that awful loss to the Dolphins, why you might want to choose him, you know? But the Patriots' defense is not good. Give me Antonio Brown. Give me Ben Roethlisberger. Give me those Juju Smith-Schuster. He should be back in this game, should he not? It's 3 points. Maybe they don't win outright, but with the 3 points, you know, give me the Steelers.
I was talking to a Patriots fan last week who told me, watch, they're going to lose to the Dolphins because every year they have a game like that. The Patriots had been rolling. They were blowing teams out. They looked great, and they had one bad game that apparently Patriots fans could sense was coming. This just looks like one of those games where, all right, who's going to be the challenger to the Patriots? And then the Patriots come in and they just showed you, nah, we're still the Patriots. We're going to take care of business. And the Steelers have just, I don't know, they keep winning and I give them all the credit, but they never look great in doing it. And they still lost to the Bears.
I'll say that you're right. Yeah, well, they did lose to the Bears, but that seems like another world ago, a lifetime ago. I get that the Steelers aren't winning pretty, but did you see the names that the Patriots are trying out defensively? I mean, who the heck are these guys?
Yeah.
That eventually is going to take its toll. I get that Belichick and his crew are known for finding these diamonds in the rough and turning them into worthy starting players, at least for a season or two. Maybe they're doing that to some degree, but eventually that catches up to you. It's not going to work every single season. They're still bad statistically defensively. Give me the Steelers. I'm standing by that.
Fair enough. I'm going to take the Patriots. Joe, you break the tie.
You know, Belichick downplayed the idea that they were overlooking the Dolphins, looking ahead to the Steelers. If you look at the statistics leaders in passing, rushing, and receiving, all three are playing in this game. Tom Brady, Le'Veon Bell, and Antonio Brown. So, like Johnsy said, this might be an offensive shootout, and I don't feel very comfortable, but home dog, I think, is going to be, you know, maybe growling a little. Maybe not a full bark, but I'll take the home dog. I'll take the home team getting points. Go with the Steelers.
All right. There it is. I certainly understand the sentiment of having the Steelers getting points at home in a game like this. It's probably the safer pick. But that'll be a good one on Sunday. So both of those Sunday afternoon games up against each other. But I guess it's a good, kind of a good day to not have a Bears game, right? Can focus in on some of these other games. It's a decent slate. So
I'm going to spend time with my family now.
Yeah, I am too, actually. But I wasn't going to tell anybody that. I don't
know.
You
want to be known as a bad husband and dad? Okay.
I don't know. I'm just kidding. Yeah, no, it's a good Sunday to get out. You know, I might go see the zoo lights, to be honest with you, Saturday. Sunday, I mean. Once we get back from Detroit.
Good little show. I've been there.
As long as nobody's throwing up everywhere, because that seems to be going around.
Yeah.
Including in Cincinnati last week. Did I see you in a Santa suit running around downtown Cincinnati?
You did not.
Yeah, for those, there was a big SantaCon thing, and it was like, I got Cincinnati, cab took me to my hotel, and we get right down to the hotel. It was like being in Wrigleyville. I mean, it was chaos. Everybody was wearing Santa suits. I walked four blocks to meet Kevin Fishbane and saw three different people throwing up. And this was at like 6 o'clock.
Too much eggnog. Chocolate chip cookies, that's it. Although I don't think there's such a thing as too much chocolate chip cookies, but sounds like eggnog poisoning if you ask me.
Too much talk about throw up in this episode, though. I will admit that.
Yeah, that's got to be like the third or fourth mention already.
Yeah, we should probably stop talking about him. We should probably end this podcast, too, come to think of it. It's about that time. Bears, Lions, again, we apologize for technical issues today and everything, but I wanted to make sure we brought this to you on Thursday. Still a couple days to soak it all in before the Bears play the Lions in what will, you know, hopefully be a competitive game. And I'll go back to what I talked about and wrote about last, you know, after the Bengals game. It's important that these young players on the Bears experience success. Stop worrying about draft picks. Stop worrying about John Fox saving his job. The best thing for this organization is Mitch Trubisky having success and the Bears' offense moving the football. So just keep that in mind. All right, John Z, any final words?
No, that's it. I'm going to wash my hands again.
All right, you go do that. Follow him on Twitter at Adam Johns, J-A-H-N-S. At Adam Hogue, H-O-G, is where you can find myself. At Joey Joro is where Joe Romano is. The voicemail line's 312-222-5050 if you want to chime in during, well, before, during, or after Saturday's game. WGNRadio.com/Bears, ChicagoSunTimes.com. It's all there. We will talk to you Saturday from Detroit.
Put them in a timeout.